Right outside of Za Pizza in the Russian Hill neighborhood of San Francisco, I'm Schmitty and this is Talkin' Schmidt. Today on the show is Sattva Leung. Sattva spent some time in Mendocino County. He spent more time filming and even more time on his board. He was on Toy Machine and had a part in their epic video Welcome to Hell. He kickstarted his filming career with Bryce Knights at Thrasher and quickly had his stress levels challenged when Bryce left, forcing him to edit Raw in the comfort of my attic in Burlingame.
With Bryce, we would go into like North Beach, this plush editing suite, like, you know, snacks, you know, like kickback. Bryce is just directing like this other editor on this like super nice machine, and I'm like, yeah, this is nice, and like, you know, it was like sweet. And then Bryce left, and then Schmitty's attic, and I was like, wow, I missed the Bryce days.
Also, it's the week before Christmas, kids, so hunker down, be safe, and fuck it, support what I'm doing with a purchase. We got shirts, we got hats, we got stickers, and we are always down to make you smile. It's TalkinSchmidt.com, and we're on the internet. Come see us. And now, without further ado...
Check one, two. This is Sattva Leung, and you're listening to Talkin' Schmidt. Schmitty!
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Here we go again.
Just give it the all cars try, right?
All big dogs in.
What do you think, Schmitty?
96 times, Schmitty.
Thanks, Schmitty.
We on? Schmitty?
Talking Schmidt.
He's so fucking busy.
He shit my pants, lad.
Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
Are you ready?
Come on, Schmidt.
Let's hear it for Greg Smith.
Yeah! All right, we're in the SFC. We got Sattva Leung for you today, kids.
Hello, Internet. Hanging out here in Inner Richmond.
Liam, how are you?
Good, man. Yeah, good to see you, man.
When do you think the last time we saw each other?
Was it that attic when we were editing Raw video?
That was the first time we saw each other.
Just kidding. What is that? Four gigs of RAM on your computer? I think I got hives editing that Raw video.
Oh, my God.
No, it's been a while. I don't know. You tell me. I don't know.
I was wondering if we've seen each other since. One of the last times I remember seeing you was at a Sodi party with the ramp. Oh. And you were like doing a documentary or something. You were with a film crew, I think.
Okay.
Chris Cole.
Oh, right.
At Fort Mason.
Fort Mason, yeah. I think I was doing some video content for Vimby, Video in My Backyard.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, and I remember that night because I got to interview Tony Hawk. Like, you just get a couple sound bites under the ramp.
Yeah.
And actually, that's like kind of the first time I think I actually talked to him. So I was kind of like, you know, starstruck a little.
Yeah.
Tony Hawk.
Birdman.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So, yeah, it's been a while, man. I'm still skating.
Yeah. Front nose.
I skate Waller 3-4 days a week. Yeah, still got nollie back tails. They got a good double sided crib there now.
Sick.
I think thanks. Is it Jack that's been putting all that stuff
I
down there?
I think so. Jack Gibbon. Yeah.
Thanks, Jack. Keep it up, man.
Yeah.
I slathered that double sided curb up with wax the other day. Getting my feeble rock feebles on.
You sneak into Amoeba for a little bit and then head out over there.
No. Amoeba's taking too much of my money. Now I'm trying to get money back from them, like sell some
you
records.
You been selling shit?
Yeah. Gotta downsize.
I gotta do that too.
I probably have 5,000 records. I'm trying to get it down to 2,000.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I probably have 500. I'm trying to get down to 200.
Hey, you want to buy some records?
No. Were you born up in Humboldt?
So I was actually, we moved up to Mendocino when I was like, I want to say like one or two, like I was a baby, but I was actually born in Riverside, East LA, homes.
Oh.
Yeah, Riverside. My Chinese grandma lived in Riverside, California. So I was actually born there, but then soon after, parents were hippies, had the VW bus, moved up to Mendo, and I was up in Mendocino for until about fifth grade, and then moved further up to Arcata, Trinidad area. Yeah.
How many reggae on the rivers did you do?
I only did one. But I think I was like I don't know, 15 maybe,
uh-huh,
or 16. And, you know, even back then, the tickets, like, it's not a cheap ticket, you know, to get into that thing. But they had under 12 years old, you get in for a dollar. And I looked kind of young still, so I managed to still like pull off the under 12 for a dollar. So yeah, that was fun.
That's rad. When did you discover skateboarding?
So I think I didn't really start skating until I was about 8, which was like, I guess, 84. I want to say a couple years before that. I think my mom bought me, bought a banana board, the plastic kind of banana board, like a blue one at a garage sale in Mendocino. So I was, you know, I'd roll around our little deck on that. But then like, come like 8 years old, I, you know, got a Tommy Guerrero with the flames. Ah. And, you know, at the time, actually, my dad had this computer store in Fort Bragg, and we called the software store. And me and my stepbrother convinced him to sell skateboards also in the store. So he like opened up, it was like computer / skate shop, you know, in the 80s. 80s computer nerds with 80s punk rock skateboarders. It was pretty classic. So, but it was cool because I get some, you know, I'd get some boards from him, so it was great. But I remember that Tommy Guerrero, and I remember, you know, cutting the grip tape out to match the flaming dagger, and it took like hours, and I just like, yeah, but yeah, damn. old man.
Yeah,
I wish I still had that board, man.
I got that one on my wall.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right, I'll buy it for you.
Trade you for 20 records.
Tommy, give me a board. They're like reissuing all those boards now, aren't they?
Yeah.
If I just buy one,
Yeah, I think you can get them from PAL. It's like records, right? Do you want the original or do you want the reissue?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just want a new one on my wall. Yeah. I don't think anyone's going to come and go, that's weak. That's a reissue. So were you up there when you got good or?
So, yeah. So we moved it from Mendocino in fifth grade, moved up to Trinidad, which is north of Arcata.
Yeah.
Small little fishing village. There's like nothing there to skate, man.
Right.
And I actually surfed more at that point from like kind of sixth through eighth grade because we live right by the water and, you know. And then like high school, I kind of started skating more again.
What mill wetsuit were you wearing up there?
Yeah, booties, gloves, and 5 mil, man. It's like Alaska up there.
Woo!
But I remember a funny story on the surfboard. I like, you know, one of my mom's friends, I was doing like gardening work for her, and you know, she like didn't pay me in cash, and I was like, I'm humble, like she's like, here, I'll give you this surfboard, and she like gave me this like twin fin board, and I remember I was so stoked, and I just like paddled out, no wetsuit. I was kind of hypothermia. Wow. I was like, okay, I guess I need to get a wetsuit. But but yeah, so come high school, definitely started skating more. It's like launch ramp days, and like, I remember just skating launch ramps with like Josh B and Mitch and all these guys up in Arcata. And they were kind of the older, like high school kids. And so I was kind of the freshman. They took me under their wing. And so that was cool. You know, I could skate with the older kids. Junior, senior year, we had a multimedia class. And that's actually how I kind of learned about editing and filming.
Oh.
Yeah. It was Mr. Renwick. Thank you. It was funny because it was like kind of after lunch, total like the stoner class. People go in there just like, do claymation videos. Just like,
yeah,
all the Heshers
stop
in there
motion.
Yeah, just hang out, like you could do anything, but somehow this guy had decent gear, like, I guess high eight editing, or maybe it was like the mini VHS, you know, that expanded into the VHS.
Oh yeah,
remember those?
That's what we did damage with.
Yeah, he had a deck-to-deck editing system, so I learned how to do some editing, and we could actually even skate in the parking lot at Arcata High, kind of film some tricks and like go back and make little edits. And you know, the teacher was really cool. He wasn't just about, okay, learn how to use some of this gear, but he's like, okay, how can you apply this to real life? We like made the sponsor videos and we sent it off. I sent a sponsor video to New School. I don't know, it wasn't full sponsorship. It was like, yeah, you're on the B team, you can buy wholesale from us. And so like, I was like something, you
we'll
know,
give you a coup, code to punch
in. Okay, cool, like I get discount, you know. But the teacher was happy. He's like, cool, see,
yeah,
kind of made an example of us. See, they're not just getting stoned making claymation videos in the corner, they're actually doing something. So yeah, and then come 18, you know, I was like, okay, I gotta get out of Arcata. Josh B was a skateboarder that like I looked up to back then. He had moved down to San Francisco already, and so I was kind of like, hey, I want to come down the fire station across the street.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I want to come down to SF. And I actually was going to SF State for a little while, but then, you know, soon dropped out to pursue skateboarding.
Huh.
Yeah. So that's kind of, I made the move down, originally kind of going to State, but just was just so happy to be down here. I'd come down in San Francisco from in the summers, like 16, 17, 18, and stay with my uncle in the Castro and just like skate in Barcadero all summer. So that was 92, 93. I was down here for the whole summer.
Wow.
Just like go kick it, skate EMB all summer, yeah.
Okay.
So I kind of already knew the city, but then when I finally moved down here, you know, I was going to State, just over it, you know, like I just wanted to skate. I could finally got out of Humboldt and you know, basically kind of a dream scenario. One evening was skating down there and Jamie Thomas saw me skating and asked me if I had any sponsors. I was like, no. Was like, hey, I want to give you some boards. And so that kind of led to being sponsored. It was, you know, the dream scenario, you know.
When Jamie was living down there or later?
So Jamie had, I think, already moved down south and
Southern California.
Getting involved with Toy Machine, exactly.
Okay.
But I had seen him before when I was coming down in the summers, you know, prior to before he had gotten involved with Toy Machine, yeah. So
at that stage, were you still continuing the filming and editing thing as like a hobby type thing from your school, or did you get back into it once you kind of got in like sponsored and stuff?
Yeah, so 18 when I moved down, yeah, I think I still had a VX1000, and then I'd always skate with the Russian Twins. And the Russian Twins, Alex and George Tarakov, present.
Shout out.
And then Serge Chuckleaf. so they Russian Twins had a Sony camera. I think they stole it. Sorry, throwing you under the bus. I think they stole it from like, I don't know. But anyways, they had a good Sony camera. So they would always be filming. And so I was filming. We'd film each other. And so, yeah, we would, you know, make little sponsoring tapes. And, you know, that's why I was asking you about the height deck. Like, oh, I got all these tapes, man.
Yeah.
Like, I want to, like, watch these tapes. But anyways, yeah, so we were filming. And I think once I started getting flow, you know, from Toy Machine, then it was like, okay, I got to skate more versus filming more. But I still liked it, you know. I still liked filming and, you know, just, like, kind of part of skateboarding back then. You kind of got to film and
yeah.
You kind of know how to film.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it keeps an extra spot in the car for you too.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're on the bubble and yeah. You got the camera, you're in.
Yeah. But speaking of the Russian Twins, like there's some funny stories of those guys, man. I had a lot of fun skating with those guys. We just always skate in Barcadero and just like train. Like today we train switch flip and just like do switch flips all day long. They just like have all these crazy tactics. And in Barcadero, like I remember, they would take their old boards and then sand down the edges, spray paint it, sticker it up, put some new bolts in, and then like resell those used boards for like $20-$25. And just like embargo tricks, I would see them just to get money, you know? It was classic. Yeah, I just remember just hanging out with those guys a lot. Yeah, for sure.
Did you see anybody get ganked down there? You see any crazy
shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I almost got jacked. I remember one time.
Yeah.
I think not when I moved down, but like when I was like 16, 17, I think I rolled up to Embarco one night with like, you know, brand new Mike Carroll board, just brand new setup. I was stoked to be in the city. And, you know, some like thug dude saw me and chased me down Market Street. And
yeah,
I battled it out and kept my board, you know? But I've seen it go down where, you know, they do the trick, you know, tourist kid rolls up. Oh, let me check out your board. They just like to skate off with it. And, like, I'm not going to name any names.
Yeah.
Jacques.
So how did you meet Bryce and get started with that stuff?
With Thrasher, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I can't remember where exactly I met him, but I remember just doing like a checkout with him, you know?
For the mag,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe I met him just Russian Twins or Embarcadero or something. I don't know. Somehow through that, but yeah, I can't remember, man. Sorry, Bryce, but yeah, basically, I think I was struggling in the city. You know, Toy Machine wasn't paying me much. You know, I'm working at Za Pizza.
Yeah,
you gotta do something else to like, you know, pay the rent in the city. You know, it's not like it is now. It's crazy. So I started working at Thrasher, filming and editing their videos, and that was nice to have just like a little kind of buffer to help pay the bills living in the city.
What was the first video?
Yeah, so the first video we did was Raw.
That was your first video?
Well, editing.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, officially. You okay. Know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You had filmed for prior videos?
Nothing like official though.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh. It was like sponsor me videos.
I thought you were kind of the old veteran coming into the war zone.
No man, I mean that was the first official video that I was like, you know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would say like Skate and Destroy, definitely something to be proud of. Like that, yeah. Video. I was stoked on putting that.
That one came later.
Yeah, that one came later. And there was a bunch of Thrasher videos that I was doing. Like, I want to say, was it like 95 to 96 I was working at Thrasher? Because I think by 97, I think Dan Libby took over.
Yeah, probably.
No, it was a lot of fun. I mean, so yeah, that's when Bryce was there, and it was cool working with him.
So what happened? You get a phone call from Bryce or Fausto or whatever, and they're like, you got to go down to Burlingame. Like, how'd that all happen?
I can't remember. I think I had just like kind of gotten the gig there, and they're like, all right, cool, your first assignment, go edit this video. And I'm like, I had done some editing, you know, at my house, in high school, so... But then, yeah, so was it your garage? Your attic?
It was mine.
It was your attic. So yeah. It was in Schmitty's attic, this crazy old computer, PC.
Oh, yeah. Man.
I think 4 gigs of RAM. What was it? Was it Media Composer we were on? I don't know. It was crazy.
I think it was maybe Avid.
Yeah, I think it was Avid Media Composer.
Okay.
And just it was just crazy. That was the craziest editing experience of my life.
That was called rendering.
Yeah, yeah. I was sleeping there in the attic, right? Yeah, I was sleeping there. You know, I mean, like 18, 19, like whatever, like woo. I'm like working with Thrasher. I'm gonna sleep in the attic and edit for 2 weeks. And
Paul called me and he was like, "Hey, Fausto needs somebody to edit the next video. Are you down?" I was like, "Huh?" And he's like, "We just got to go buy an external hard drive for your computer. We can figure it out." Like, "Huh?" And I was like, "I mean, I'm not going to say no, but I don't know if we got this."
Yeah, yeah. And that was just crazy.
And that was at the same time that you guys were kind of wrapping up the Toy Machine video.
Yeah, yeah.
Jump Off a Building, right?
I think it was Welcome to Hell. But back to Raw, right? It was Raw, right?
Yeah, we had to call it Raw.
Yeah, it was Raw. But it was back then editing. So you would do all this work, and if your computer would crash, like it did, all the work would just get deleted.
Yeah.
So it was just so insane. We were like, you know, we had like no RAM on this computer, nothing. It was just crazy. We do all this work. Oh, we got this good edit, and then crash. Like, oh, jeez. And I remember after 2 weeks, like at one point I got hives. I've never gotten hives from ever, but Raw gave me hives. And yeah, that was the crazy experience, but we got it done, you know. It was great, you know, and that was a good like jump in. And it was so this was actually kind of funny, because so this was prior Bryce, I think, had already left.
Yeah, actually, so, you're right.
So when I first started with Bryce, we would go into like North Beach, this plush editing suite, you know, snacks, you know, like kickback. Bryce is just directing like this other editor on this like super nice machine. And I'm like, yeah, this is nice. And like, you know, it was like sweet. Then Bryce left and I guess Luke took over.
Right.
Right. Ogden. And then Schmitty's attic, and I was like, wow, I missed the Bryce days. but it was cool, you know. It was a good experience, and just like it was a good like just crunch time and just get it done, man. Yeah.
And that was kind of, that might have been the world's introduction to Roger Foster.
Yep, Cairo. Yeah, Roger. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Cairo. I met him, I guess through Dan Libby. Huh. I think. Uh-huh. And yeah, we skate together a lot. We'd all just posse up and yeah, when I was filming for Thrasher, it was just like so good to like, I get so much footage mm-hmm. with him. Like, you just go out for a day, you just kill it.
I think he had like Cairo. Almost a full part in that video.
Yeah,
like there weren't really parts, it was mostly montages, but Cairo's was very substantial.
Yeah. Cairo, and then I remember skating a lot with like Ray Chavez.
Joel Valdez.
Valdez. Those guys would just kill it, just blaze out of their minds, skating down the avenues, and just like, Oh God! Speaking of which, I remember being at Hubba Hideout, like when I was actually was sponsored with Jamie, and I remember I guess it was Sean Mitchell. I think he was on acid. I think it was that day like BA Brian Anderson filmed like some lines at Hubba. One of the Toy Machine videos. I'm kind of lost. It's all blur, man. But anyways, Sean Mitchell was there on acid, and you know he was like doing some weird manual on. Like, you know how the Hideout goes up the stairs and it's flat and then it goes up again. Somehow, like, manualing the whole edge of the bridge, like, on acid.
Oh,
like,
dude, damn.
What are you doing, man?
Those guys loved acid.
Another acid story for Talkin' Schmidt.
Yeah, we're going to do a best of acid at the end of the year.
Back to that first time when me and Bryce went into that edit suite in North Beach. It kind of like sparked in my mind, like, wow, this is cool. I want to like continue to pursue editing and video production. Just and I'm sure the studio is not there anymore, and you know, editing has changed from back then to now. But it was definitely like inspiring seeing that
for sure.
Yeah, thanks, BK.
Shout out.
Damn. Yeah, Bryce definitely opened a lot of doors for a lot of people. Do you remember the process of that Toy Machine video in? Contrast to like
which video?
It's the one where Muska was gonna have a part.
Yeah, Welcome to Hell.
Welcome to Hell. It was the first. It was basically. I'm pretty sure it's your first part in a non-thrasher video.
Yeah. Well, heavy metal was like a mini part.
Okay.
And
but this video. Was a very highly anticipated video. Yeah. Everyone knew like Jamie's gonna have an epic part. Yeah. Muska was supposed to, and so there's this. I always thought like. There's this huge, like, this is like the cream of the crop video. And then on the other hand, we got Raw.
Right.
So, yeah. And you were dealing with both those at the same time. And I thought, like, man, this guy's probably going back to Jamie and going, dude, you cannot believe what is going on this other thing.
Well, Jamie could believe because he, you know, he lived in the city. He knew, you know, what was going on over there. But Welcome to Hell. So, like a bunch of stuff going on. I mean, so first off, just to kind of throw it out there, Jamie had always told me, hey, you know, I'm going to come up to the city. I'm going to stay for a few months. We're going to film a proper part. So that's kind of always in the back of my head. Uh-huh. I get the phone call. He's like, hey, I'm flying down to San Diego. You got 2 weeks to film your part. I'm like, what? I thought you were going to like come up here. Like that's why a lot of my footage in Welcome Hell is in San Diego. Because I filmed like majority of it in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I mean, I wasn't fully involved with the full production of Welcome to Hell.
Okay.
So anyways, I had some footage up here, like probably filmed with like Russian Twins or other filmers. Went down San Diego, cranked out that part. But yeah, I remember the day of the premiere. There was all this drama with Once again, the freaking computer crashing and Jamie, like we couldn't export it. It kept crashing. So like, you know, we were doing everything we could and it just wasn't happening, you know, like, and so we're watching the clock as it goes down, you know, the premiere's, I don't know, I'm guessing at 6 o'clock at night and it's like, you know, 4:30 or five or something. And like, okay, it's just not going to happen. And so, and, you know, we're up maybe 30, 40 minutes from was it La Paloma? It's the big San Diego theater.
Yeah.
La Paloma?
I think so, yeah.
I can't remember the name. And so we got to go. And this is around like kind of 5 o'clock traffic. And so it's like bumper to bumper. Like, okay, great. We're going to be late to the premiere. I remember Jamie driving on the shoulder of like down the freeway.
Passing cars.
Like 10 miles. Bumper to bumper. He just like, fuck it. Yeah. All the way to the premiere. Get there. Yeah. Then Musk is all like faded off Goldschlager. And there's all that drama. And he blows up. And Ed tells him, sorry, man, there's not going to be any premiere. And so then he just, blows up on Ed and just totally like disrespects Ed. And then, you know, that led to him getting kicked off. Like Ed just couldn't, you know, have that.
Yeah.
Disrespectfulness in this public place. And just like, you know, he had to let you know, man. So he got kicked off and then went to Shorty's or something. Is that what happened? I don't know.
He went to Shorty's.
Yeah.
But then they re-edited the video without his part.
Exactly. Yeah. Just crazy times filming with Jamie because, you know, I would go down there. I was trying to film my part, but then Jamie like had all these tricks. And so like a lot of times I'd be like, he'd be like, okay, we're gonna go, you know, you gotta film me, and I'll go to some crazy handrails, and like, that was just insane, because he'd do shit first try, and I'm like, hope I got it, man. Yeah. You know, like filming, you're like, you like it, yeah, when kind of like take a little longer, like, right, so you can, you know, like figure out your angle and whatnot. And so that was pretty intense filming him. But also, like, you know, super inspirational. Like definitely want to thank Jamie Thomas for everything. Like, you guys, super inspiring, totally hooked me up.
I got a couple clips I want to remind you of.
Yeah.
There's this one, I'm pretty sure you filmed it. You're at Fort Miley, and Phil Shao grinds the top bar.
Yep. Jesus, man. I mean, that was just probably one of the gnarliest things I've seen. I remember you on the Strubing's podcast, you asked him what was the gnarliest thing he's seen, and he mentioned the loop at Tampa.
Shit. Yeah.
And so that was definitely on par for sure.
Yeah.
Like a different scenario. Like the loop was like probably definitely some of the gnarliest things I've ever seen, because you're just like, is someone going to die today?
Right.
But anyways, back to Phil Shao. So I was with Luke, and it was just like very casual. Like Luke's like, you know, Luke, he's like mellow. I'm going to go take some photos of Phil Shao, Fort Marley. Okay, cool. I think the gnarliest thing, like the grind was gnarly. Like that was definitely insane. But I think the gnarliest thing for me that day was watching Phil warm up at Fort Miley. Like just like huge ollies over the hip, just getting kind of warmed up. Just watching him warm up was just like, was like so magical that day. And then yeah, when he grinded, he did it like pretty easy, because I remember it was kind of like at dusk and the light was going down.
Yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, he just grinded it. I just remember like being under there and getting it, and it was like fairly mellow, even though it was so gnarly at the time. But I remember him like watching him warm up, and it was just like, that was just awesome.
So I was alluding to something else, but maybe you didn't film, because Phil had to do it twice.
Right.
Because the first time Drehobel got in front of the camera, I thought maybe Whiteley filmed that one, and then he went back and you filmed
it. Yeah, because I think it was just me, Luke, and Phil that day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because there's a video and Drehobel comes right across as he's grinding, and Drehobel's looking at the camera like, oh, fuck.
I mean, I loved filming Drehobel too, like in the Thrasher videos. That was so fun, man.
Welfare Banks?
Yeah, Welfare, China Banks. Like, I remember like right when I moved down to the city, kind of 94, and I knew Joel Price from Santa Rosa.
Right.
And Joel knew like Matt and Dan, because like I guess he was on Think. And I remember going over, Matt Pale's like big weed smoker, you know, coming from Humboldt. Oh yeah, so I think I would do trades with Pales. Like he traded me his canoe board, you know, for some dank.
No way.
Yeah, and so that was cool. Like, did he give me complete, I think he skated it for the day. So I was like even like kind of stoked too, because like, you know, oh, I got Pales' board.
Right.
But I remember it was like pretty like big and like super concave, and I like smaller boards. So, but it was cool. Like I was stoked. I also remember, so this, I'm just kind of like thinking about all the, like the hand-me-downs I would get. I remember the McGrath house, Dennis McGrath, Drake Jones.
Yeah.
God, who else was it? Marcus McBride, Jesse McMillan.
Oh yeah.
Who I worked with at Lyft HQ. Jesse McMillan, creative director at Lyft.
Wow.
He was my boss at one point. But anyways, we would go over there. I think this is like, I always want to say like 95-ish. And so I didn't have a shoe sponsor at the time. And I think like Drake Jones would either, he'd probably sell them to me, but maybe he gave me some shoes, but I'm a 9.5 and Drake Jones is like 11.5. And Drake at the time was like sponsored, like getting shoes from every shoe company. He had like, you know, the ES, like S, Sal Barbier's. And I'd always get those off him because I love those Sal Barbier shoes. But I think he had like DC's and like, I don't know. He was like milking it.
Yeah.
Freaking Drake, milking it, man. But I was like so stoked. And like, that was like the tongue time days where you'd like stuff your shoe with tongues, extra tongues. You know, so I would like get his size 11.5, or like stuff him with tongues, maybe put another insole in there. And I was like hyped. I got Drake Jones's shoes. And like, yeah, it was like classic, man.
Rad.
Yeah, the hand-me-downs.
Do you remember how you and Strubing met?
Dude, I don't remember, man.
Probably just skating.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah. But just in the city, just being in the city. You know, Jai and Kit and all them on Guerrero, rest in peace, too. It was through those guys. We used to skate with Strubing a lot. Yeah, Strubing.
Shout out.
Strubes.
We were like the party guys, too. Like, I remember just like good times with Strubing, like on the weekends. You know, it'd always be a battle between me and him who had the best like house parties. Like, this is the 90s. Like, I'd call Strubing, like, you know, this is no texting, but you know, call, you got any parties? I'm like, oh, I got a couple. Okay, we'll go to your party first, and we'll go to this one next. Like, Western Edition, Mission. Like, we just like be on the party mission with Strubing. You know the party mission with Strubing. You've done it.
Strubing's still on that mission. Yeah, he's still going. That guy's like the Energizer Rabbit.
Yeah, and I've been trying to learn butter knives on the double sided curb at Waller, but it's hard. So, Strubing, come show me how to do it.
The butter knife is insane. I filmed him doing one in L.A. like a year or two ago, and I was like,
nice.
Yeah, that's good. What, from the old days when you first came till now, what's one spot or two spots you wish was still around in the city?
Brown Marble. definitely love that place. And then, I mean, let's see. Yeah, the old Union Square was good. Brown Marble. I would say those two places, yeah.
Did you clock a lot of time at Pier 7?
I mean, I definitely did. I would say I would go to other places more than maybe others. I wouldn't just go there all day long every weekend.
Would you say you skated there more or filmed there more?
I don't know. I would say it would be like more of like a meetup spot. Like, right. Let's meet up there. Maybe, film someone and then go somewhere else. Yeah.
I spent a lot of time.
Yeah.
Rob Welsh had me down there a lot. Yeah. Then Henry and then, man. Yeah. So when did you kind of start getting more serious about the DJ stuff?
So that was like early 2000s. I mean, yeah, I was like definitely hustling at one point. I was like a full-time DJ. I was DJing. I'd have like 3 gigs a week. Like, I was DJing.
You had Milk, right?
So yeah, I DJed Milk. I remember the Hush Hush, like in the Mission.
Yeah.
And was it DeBose? It was right there. I don't know what it is now.
Yeah, I think it's actually 14th, maybe.
Or it was 14th, yeah.
Yeah. But it's actually right by where Strubing lived.
Yeah, exactly. But I think I had like a... No, I had Wednesday night at the Beauty Bar in the Mission. And I think I had Thursday night at Hush Hush. And then Friday, I was DJing up at Rosewood in North Beach.
Oh, damn.
And then like Saturday, maybe like once or twice a month at Milk. It was just like, DJing was great. Come on with all this cash. Like, it's like stripper money. You just have this like pile of cash.
How does it work? Do they pay you like a set fee and then you get tips? Or?
So it varies. Some places they give you bar percentage. So a lot of people drink, you want to make more money.
Uh-huh.
And so that would be the places that wouldn't have a cover charge. Other places you get a set fee, you know, a few $100. But then I started actually throwing my own parties at clubs, like 111 Minute, Club 6. You know, we would do like MC battles, Freestyle Olympics, you know, just all kinds of club events, kind of do some video premieres,
sure.
Mix, maybe do some art openings. Like, and in that scenario, you'd have a cover charge. You could charge $10 at the door and, you know, you can make like a G a night, you know, like that's when it gets into real stripper money, you know, like, you just like, come on, like this pile of cash. But yeah, so at one point, you know, I was like DJing, you know, running Judas skateboards or was pro at the time, you know, like, you know, filming, DJing, skateboarding. It was just like, just going crazy. But
damn. Yeah. Did you ever valet park?
Never valeted. No. Yeah. Did you?
No, I didn't.
Did? Okay. I was like,
I know a lot of people. Yeah. Yeah.
Who is it?
Elias.
Elias. And then Roughneck. Johnny Roughneck.
Yeah. Exactly.
Roughneck.
So, what was up with Judah?
Yeah, so Judah, so kind of moving back to kind of Toy Machine, you know, as Am, wanted to turn pro, living in the city, you know, working at ZA, like, come on, Ed, like, can I go pro anytime, man? What's up, man? Struggling, you know? And, you know, Maple, Steve Benson calls me up, like, you know, hey man, want to like maybe see if you want to ride for Maple Man, turn you pro. I'm like, all right, yeah, how much you gonna pay me? They throw out some money towards me. I'm like, you know, I gotta survive. So like I made the switch, got on Maple, eventually then got on Dynasty, and then eventually Watson Wood just like shut down. Prior to them shutting down, I was on Dynasty for a while, and they're like, hey, do you want to do your own company? You know, and I was like, yeah, sure, like why not, you know, like, you know, me being the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Like, let's do it. So yeah, I started Judah, but then eventually, yeah, Watson just shut down, and they're like, all right, we're gonna shut it down. Actually, Brad Dorfman from, you know, Vision, was it Select Distribution?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, he's interested in Judah. And I'm like, oh, Dorfman, really? Okay. Heard shady stories, but, you know, but I can either just can it, or I can still at least keep it going for a little while, kind of figure out what I'm going to do next, you know? And so I let Dorfman kind of take it over and just did it for like, I don't know, less than a year, and then just like called it quits. It got to a point where I was just like, oh, I'm done with it.
Right.
But yeah, as you do, it was a fun run for a sec, you know. I think just the whole like Watson Wood going down and just kind of getting it shuffled over to Select, it just wasn't the best, you know, scenario. And so then after that, I had gotten a gig team managing at Richta and Mob at NHS. Mm. And so I team managed from like, I think 2005, 2007. And at the same time, I was doing Streets. The video series Streets.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd break down cities all around the world, streets, you know, SF, LA, New York, Barcelona, 30-minute episodes on Fuel TV. They were airing it and licensing it off us, me and my partner, Stefan. And that was great. That was like being a professional skateboarder, you know, not making a lot of money, but getting to travel the world, skate, right, film. And so, yeah, I was doing Streets, DJing, running a skateboard company.
Yeah.
It's just like crazy at one point. When I started team managing for Richta Mob, I remember doing Streets New York. And so that was kind of cool because I comboed it up to where I took the first grip tape tour, Mob Grip Tour to New York. Oh. That was a crazy tour. Jack Curtin, Kareem Campbell, Antoine Dixon, I think Enrique Lorenzo.
Damn.
Who else was there? I don't know. It's probably someone else. I'm forgetting. Sorry. Yeah, I took them all to New York, kind of on NHS's dime, but also was filming Streets New York, kind of featured those guys in Streets. You know, hey, it's Fuel TV coverage, you know?
Yeah.
It was definitely a hustle, but, you know, I found a way to kind of mix it all together, you know? And then, like, the other Streets that was a lot of fun was Streets Barcelona.
Oh,
you know, good times out there with Gerard.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had an apartment down by the beach, just stayed a couple summers. And
oh, sick.
And this is a time when like Strubing was out there too. He was with Ingrid.
Oh, okay.
At the time they had that house, and that was a lot of fun. Good times in Barcelona. This is like 2003, 2004.
Uh-huh.
It was just so fun. It's kind of before Barcelona got fully blown out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, I'm sure, good. I haven't been there really since then, but.
Oh.
But yeah, just so many good memories doing Streets and being out in Barcelona. And yeah, so, and then, yeah, so come 2008, I want to say, I was done with Richta and Mob and kind of just like called it quits with the pro career and just started like working full time in video production. And that's what I do now. I mean, video producer, shooter, editor, just working in the city, a lot of freelance.
A lot of freelance.
And yeah, a lot of stuff for like tech companies and whatnot, you know. So it pays the bills.
Yeah. Is that stressful? Like, do you have any constants or is it a hustle?
I mean, it's a hustle still, but I'm at a really good point right now. I'm like, I'm with a few different production companies that just give me steady work and I just have a couple steady clients and it's great. You know, I got two kids, Milo and Maceo. Shout out.
Yeah.
They're 6 and 8. And so it's like, freelance is great when it's steady. There's ups and downs for sure, but I'm definitely at a point where I've been doing it for a while and I have steady clients and I'm in a good place, you know.
Okay.
But it's great when freelance is good and you're raising a family. You know, I can go pick up the kids early, you know, go out, run around with them and just be there for them versus, you know, working at 9 to 5 and like never see your family. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Are you doing any editing or mostly filming or
both? Shooting, editing, producing. Oh. Yeah, so doing it kind of all, which is nice. I like that. It's like, you can be editing for one project, and then you're just like stuck in that dungeon, don't see the light of day, yeah. And then it's nice to get out, go film, exactly. Be out, So it's nice to kind of, and as a freelancer, you kind of got to wear multiple hats to get the work. If you're just an editor, then it can be tough. If I was just an editor, I'd probably go work full time somewhere.
Yeah. Do you usually work solo or do you have teams mostly?
Both. Oh, yeah. Some shoots. Yeah. It'd be like 5 to 10 people. Other shoots could just be me, like maybe a sound guy. So it depends. Just depends on the job. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to get a documentary going with Arco on China Banks.
Cool.
I know you had a pretty memorable moment there.
When I got tackled?
Yeah. What exactly happened?
Yeah. So I guess we were filming for Welcome to Hell with Jamie. Jamie was filming. Yeah. Uh-huh. That day was crazy. That was the same day like we were at like California Street. I think Maldonado like. He backside 180 California Street, I think.
Oh.
It was just crazy. That was psycho. I remember that.
Yeah.
That
street gap that's street not there gap. Anymore.
Yeah. I think that was the same day that like Muska tried to tail slide Cardiel nose slide and jacked his ankle. Oh. And then we ended up at China Banks. I was trying to do like a front side 5-0 grind over the bench to fakie, like coming fakie over the bench, and like I almost had it, man. I was coming so close. And yeah, that clip, like I wish Jamie would have played that clip, let it start a little bit earlier, because the craziest thing about that clip when I'm getting tackled by the cops is that you see me pushing and you see the cop kind of come behind me, and he's just running behind me for a while. And like Jamie kind of put in right when he tackled me, but you just see me like pushing, like la-di-da, going up to the banks. And you see this like Terminator cop just like chasing behind me, just like ready to just tackle me. And
no idea he was there.
Yeah. So what happened was we were skating the banks, and there's that elevator at China Banks. There's an elevator you can go up from the bottom level. And as I was rolling in, pushing full speed, the doors opened on the elevator. So he just saw me thinking that I was running from him. And so he just came out of the elevator and then started running towards me, thinking I was running from him. And then, fully just like tackled me. And of course, Jamie sees him running. And he just keeps filming. He doesn't like kind of stop, like wave me down, like stop. Like, yeah. I don't know. That was kind of funny. But yeah, so he like fully tackled me and like, I remember, I think Morford was there, and I just remember, just throwing me down and convinced I was running from him. Like, you're running from me, you little punk. And I'm like, dude, I wasn't running from you. If I was running from him, why would I go try one last trick? If I was running, I would have just kept skating down the, went into the hotel right there. But yeah, that was crazy that day. Can you give me your height deck so I can dig up that footage? But actually, Jamie would have that footage.
Oh, you won't?
Because he was filming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got to hit Jamie. Up Jamie. Yeah. Good luck on that.
Yeah.
Shit.
I mean, you could always rip the clip though, right?
Yeah, but it would be sick to get the raw.
It would be. Yeah.
And anything else, just like to have extra stuff. Like, oh, you haven't seen this though or whatever.
Well, if I ever buy this height camera off eBay, I'll be able to dig through my tapes and see if I like made a copy of it. Because I would try to like keep my footage. But if he made,
I'll hit up Jamie. I know I talked to him a while back, and he was like, "Those tapes are it's gonna take me forever." And I was like, "Okay, but I'll go down there."
Yeah. So when are they set to demolish it?
I don't know. Okay. I've seen some sketches that show they're not gonna demolish it, but they're just gonna add a bunch of planter boxes to make it not skatable.
Right.
But it still probably could be skatable, just in a different way. I don't know.
Okay.
We'll see. I just want to do this because I was tripping out that I had like a bunch of footage, and it's always cool to like actually remind people of Phil, because that was, I grew up with Phil and he's been gone forever, but like just the shit he did is still stands out in time,
For sure. But, were you there that day when like, was it Timmy Kenny was killing it in Drehobel?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm sure you've been there before with them, but
yeah,
I think
that was the Thrasher.
That was like the day, right?
Yeah, damaged after credits or during credits.
Dude, that was insane.
Phil like tail slid it to Reaver and landed on the tranny coming in fakie. Perfect. It was like, whoa.
That day was insane.
And I think talking to Drobel, he said that he board slid over the bench that day. And no one had done anything on the lip over the bench at that time.
Right.
And after he did that, no one did anything on the lip over the bench for like 10 more years or something.
Right.
So it was like really impressive.
That day was
and
insane.
McKenney lip slid it. Yeah. It was like.
I just remember that day. McKenney was just like destroying it. And I guess, Phil was there. And like, was even Duffy there that day?
No, that was a different day. Duffy was later. Yeah. But I feel like maybe McGrath was there taking photos.
Okay.
It's foggy for sure.
Yeah.
Somebody has a Matt O'Brien, I think, nollie tail slide.
Oh, that's sick.
That's pretty cool.
Over the bench?
No.
Oh, just
on the thing. That's just crazy. Some stuff that like doesn't really come to mind when you think of it. Like here's some other like rad stuff.
That's sick. Speaking of Sean Mitchell and Valdez, those guys have some sick China Banks footage. I remember like there's like at that weird corner.
Dude, I have an hour interview with Joel Valdez.
Okay, cool.
About him ollieing on the outside around the outer ball.
Yeah. That's psycho. Dude,
so insane. Yeah, that dude is, he's in South City. He's like all yoked. I think he does a lot of weightlifting.
Yeah.
But he sat down and we talked forever. It was in his mind.
Nice. Yeah, he's like a trainer or something.
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
I think he just like he got married. He's been sober, and he's putting his the things that made you want to drink into like positive stuff. I think.
Yeah.
So.
What about Tim McKenney?
Yeah, Tim.
Where's Tim at, man?
First impressions with Tim McKenney. Great skater, great filmer, funny ass dude. Leung. Anyways, it's in the city, and it was actually the first impression of Cairo Foster too. It was us three. I can't remember who else was there, but remember meeting Cairo. First impression was Sotva calling him Cairo Prontix. This is Cairo Prontix. Thought that was hilarious. Next, we're at China Banks. And Sotva, I wish you could find the footy, dude. That was my first ever footy at China. Was you filming me grinding the top of it. And when I landed it, the look on Cairo's face was priceless. Because this is the techest dude in the world looking at me with mind-boggled eyes. And I remember that. I wish you could find that footage, Sapa. My first 50-50 grind on the top of China with you and Cairo. I love you guys.
Tim's in Pacifica.
What up, Tim?
Tim texts me every morning.
Oh, sick.
It's so sick. He starts skating again. He's like skating every day.
One more session on China Banks, Tim.
He's like, dude, I want the lip slide over the bench. I was like, you better get it soon because I just seen some guy Smith ground over the bench.
Oh, yeah.
So sick. If somebody can do that, the lip slide's next.
Nice.
So fun. Let's take a quick time out, hear from some of our peeps. And we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah. Well, if you get rid of all your records, you're getting rid of a lot of them. Is there four or five records, or is there one record that you take to every, like, is there some that are going with you to every DJ night?
Do you mix it up?
I mean, is there one, like, I have to have this one?
God, that's a tough question. It's like, you know, what's the drill trick you've ever seen? Like, who's your favorite skater? It's like,
stop,
you know? I mean, so back to the DJ stuff. So like, I was DJing with records like for a while, but then eventually I moved over to Serato, like the digital program where you're still using two records, but the records are just blank and they're just like reading the MP3 off your laptop. So that's what all the DJs use now. So you just bring your laptop, you have your two records. So you still have the vinyl feel, but you're controlling all your music off your hard drive.
So that's why you can get rid of your records.
Well, I mean, so back to like, what would be the records? I mean, I have so much like 90s hip hop, like singles, like oh, like Mobb Deep, like Wu-Tang, all these like 90s hip hop singles. Cause like when you DJ, you want the single cause you can get the instrumental.
Right.
And then like, and so like I have tons of like, you know, that would be like the crate, more like the crate of records I would save is like all that 90s hip hop that, and it's like the singles that are like hard to find now. For sure. But like, there's so much crap records I have because like when you're a full-time DJ, like a lot of these clubs like want you to play like the top 40 like crap, you know, like on the radio. And so like you'd kind of like buy some of that, you know, those records, you know, but there's just like so much of it. It's like you know, freaking like Nelly. It's just all these like cheesy, like,
yeah,
you know, records.
One that, hit
like,
wonder.
You know, like that the club owner wants, but never going to like, you know, hold on to it afterwards, you know. But I mean, but now, you know, I'll DJ like a couple times a year, like down at Madrone over on like Felon de Visitero. I'm like the fill-in DJ, like,
okay,
you know, like, oh yeah, someone can't make it, can you fill it? You know, so you know, it's fun getting out there. I had to take a break, like I took a break from when we had our kids, you know, like first kid, like, you know, record DJ, you know, lifestyle, you're coming home at 3 a.m, you know, you have a baby, you wake up at 6, like it just wasn't working. Like right when her, you know, first, when Milo was born, she was a baby. I just like had to give it a break, you know,
for sure.
But yeah, 90s hip hop would be the crate I would keep.
Nice.
I mean, there's so many records I have. I just got to like dig through them and, you know, find those gems. I remember record shopping in Tampa. More stories. Okay, I'll keep going. The record shopping. So I remember being on tours, Toy Machine, Ezekiel Tour, whatever, any tours, and I would like, you know, go do the demo and then maybe go steal the van and go record hunting after the demo was over. Everyone's at back of the hotel, like getting stoned or something. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna take the van. Go over to the local record shop and go dig around. And like, you know, I'd find crazy records like in Europe or across the US. And
how do you do that? Do you have a suitcase or something that fits records?
I mean, yeah, I would have.
Like, how do you travel?
I would be kind of limited to, I would just, you know, maybe buy a few, you know what I mean? But like, I remember one year at Tampa, like I think I went record hunting with, I think Darren Navarette, was it? I don't know. But there was like a crazy old record, I guess it was a distributor, but it was like a warehouse full of records. I can't remember the name of it. I think, you know, we were super hungover. It was probably like a Mons Venus like mega party before the night before. And I think Navarette like puked in the corner at the record warehouse. Like, oh, sorry. Like he's like digging for like, you know, Maiden records. You know, I'm looking for hip hop records. I think he puked in the corner.
Oh man.
Navarette.
Shut up.
but that was a sick find because it was like this huge record warehouse. I think I found some good shit there for sure.
That's rad. All right, we gotta give a shout out to who was the staff at Zah. We have Nikhil there.
Oh, Zah, man. So
Brad Johnson.
So yeah, Brad, Nikhil, Dennis, Carl.
Who's in it?
No, McGrath.
Oh, Dennis McGrath.
Yeah.
Oh. Jason Whistler.
Whistler might still be there.
Oh.
Matt Jones.
Uh-huh.
Jake's brother.
Did Welch work there now?
Probably. Yeah. I was actually more at Little Zah than the restaurant, like up on Hyde. Little Zah was like the little small like hole in the wall on Polk Street. And it was just like, you just sell slices, you know?
Okay.
But yeah, back to Little Zah, like, I remember seeing like, I think Carl Watson in there, like doing art, you know?
Like, yeah, Carl.
Classic, yeah.
Did that bum you out on pizza? Did you stop eating pizza?
Oh, hell no. I mean, this is like, so I think I lived with Rob Welsh, Nikhil, Jonah back then in the Zah days. And like, you know, I would always bring home pizza. Like, you know, and they'd be stoked. Never like, you know, that'd be like breakfast, you know, the day, next day, you know. So, yeah, dude, pesto, potato pesto, man.
Yeah, but, love that one.
But the owner at the time, I think Ziggy, he sold me his piece of shit car, 1979 Dodge Omni, orange, $250.
No way.
Piece of shit, like, car. But I was like, oh, $250, whatever, I'll take it. Stick shift. I had it like for 2 weeks, maybe. Was Scott Surface from Canada, old skate snowboarder photographer, had come down and like was staying with me, and so he was like staying with me, and we like drove it around a little bit. He shot some photos for Thrasher.
Oh yeah.
And we went out one day with Ron Whaley, and Ron Whaley like kind of we set like a little launch ramp, and he like ollied kind of over the hood of the car, and it was the cover of Thrasher. That was my Dodge Omni from Zaw.
Wow. Yeah. Claim to fame.
So Surface, like, he's like, oh cool, I can use your car, like, drive around. Yeah, we shot that photo. And he was leaving to fly back, I don't know, Canada or something. And he drove it all the way to Thrasher to like maybe drop off some photos, probably of Ron Willie, like Ollie, you know, that day. And so I didn't really know how to drive stick. I kind of drove it around the avenues a little bit. And so it's at Thrasher. And so he's like, yeah, can you just, you can drive it home. I'm going to go to the airport. I'm like, okay. And so like, I kind of managed somehow to drive it from Thrasher to like Broadway and Columbus. And by the time I hit to Broadway and Columbus, I had just destroyed the gear, the linkage. I had like no gears at Broadway and Columbus. Fuck. On my way to work to Zaw, like late, calling them, hey, your freaking car broke down, Ziggy, God damn it. Parked it at Broadway and Columbus, like in a scooter spot. You can get the ticket, tow it home to my, you know, in the avenues. Freaking ticket on it the next day. Ended up like selling it to the tow truck dump, you know, yard for like $50. On the phone, they told me $50. They get to the house, they say, okay, I'll give you 25. Yeah, fucking bastards. But you don't have a choice at that point. Like, just take it, man.
Hey, it was on the cover of Thrasher.
Yeah, it was on the cover of Thrasher, but oh, man, it was the biggest lemon, man.
God damn it. What's your go-to for a burrito in the city?
Dude, they're too expensive now, man. Jesus, man. It's like $12 for a burrito now? It's like insane, man. But, you know, like Strubing, I like Pancho Villa.
Yeah, that's
I'm out here in the avenues, so it's like Gordo's, you
Gordo,
know?
Yeah.
And you can still get a Gordo burrito for $9, you know? Mm. So, I'm usually Gordo's. Papalote is good too, but yeah. But I like Pancho Villa for sure.
I like the salsa at Papalote.
Yeah.
That's good. A bomb one. All right, well, let's take it out of here with maybe a classic 90s hip-hop jam or something. Or what do you want to hear for the way out?
Mobb Deep, Shook Ones.
All right. Thank you, Savas. Oh, yeah. Awesome.
That was good.
Peace.
Yeah. To all the killers and the $100 billers. Yo, watch out. Okay. For real, because who ain't got no feelings. Feelings.
I got this. Just watch my back. I got your front.
Check it out now. I got you stuck off the realness. We be the infamous, you heard of us. Official Queensbridge murderers. The mob comes equipped for warfare. Beware of my crime family who got enough shots to share. For all those who wanna profile and pose, rock you in your face, stab your brain with your nose bone. You all alone in these streets, cousin. Every man for theyself in his land. We be gunning and keep them shook crews running like they supposed to. They come around but they never come close to. I can see it inside your face, you're in the wrong place. Cowards like you just get their whole body laced up with bullet holes and such. Speak the wrong words, man, and you will get touched. You can put your whole army against my teammate. I guarantee you it'll be your very last time breathing. Your simple words just don't move me. You're minor, we major. You're all up in the game and don't deserve to be a player. Don't make me have to call your name out. Your crew is featherweight. My gunshots will make you levitate. I'm only 19, but my mind is older. When the things get for real, my warm heart turns cold. Enough nigga deceased, another story is told. It ain't nothing really. And yo, done sparked the Philly. So I could get my mind off these yellow back niggas. While they still alive, I don't know, go figure. Meanwhile, back in Queens, the realness. is the foundation. If I die, I couldn't choose a better location. When the slugs penetrate, you feel a burning sensation. Getting closer to God in a tight situation now. Take these words home and think it through. Or the next rhyme I write might be about you. Son, they shook. Cause ain't no such things as halfway crooks. Scared to death and scared to look. They shook. Cause ain't no such things as halfway crooks. Scared to death and scared to look. Living the life that is diamonds and guns. There's numerous ways you can choose to earn funds. Some get shot, locked down, and turned nuns. Cowardly hearts and straight up shook ones.
Shook ones.
Hey, the crook, son. You just a shook one. For every rhyme I write, it's 25 to life. There was so much to got to trust, safeguard of my life. Ain't no time for hesitation, that only leads to incarceration. You don't know me, there's no relation. Queensbridge, if you don't play, I don't got time for your petty thinking, my son. I'm bigger than those, claiming that you pack heat, but you're scared to hold. And once the smoke clears, you be left with one and you don't. 13 years in the projects, my mentality is what, kid? You talk a good one, but you don't want it. Sometimes I wonder, do I deserve to live? Or am I going to burn the hell for all the things I did? No time to dwell on that, cause my brain reacts. Front if you want, kid, lay on your back. I don't fake gas, kid, you know I bring it to your life. Stay in a child's place, kid, you out of line. Criminal minds thirsty for recognition. I'm sipping, E and J got my mind flipping. I'm bucking, digging my ways out of hope for hustling. Get that loot, kid, you know my function. Cause long as I'm alive, I'ma live illegal. And once I get on them, I put on all my peoples. React with lyrics like Max, I hit your domo. When I roll up the beat, go sleep because I'm free. Son, they shook, this ain't no such thing. Halfway crooks, scared to death and scared to look. They shook, cause ain't no such thing as halfway crooks. Scared to death and scared to look. They shook, cause ain't no such thing as halfway crooks. Scared to death and scared to look. They shook, cause ain't no such thing as halfway crooks. Living the life that are diamonds and guns. There's numerous ways you can choose to earn funds. Some get shot, locked down, and turn guns. Cowardly hearts and straight up shook ones. Shook ones. He ain't a crook, son. He's just a shook one.
To all the villains and the $100 billions.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talkin' Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow up them charts. All the episodes will always remain free to my listeners, but if you'd like to help support the show, you can do so at our website, talkinschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like stickers, beanies, t-shirts, or hats. The website has an entire archive of all the episodes with extra photos and video. You can also email me with any concerns, questions, suggestions, comments, etc. at talkinschmidt@gmail.com. That's Talkin' Schmidt, TalkinSchmidt, @gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by me, Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature, and a special shout out goes to my executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
Until next week, this is Talkin' Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Talkin' Schmidt. Talkin' Schmidt. Talkin' Schmidt.